people in Taiwan's fault that we haven't worked with them. We just, that's sort of next on the list. And they'll tell you what they have to offer. With that, I'll turn to Debbie Sedgwick to let her make her introductions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Sedgwick?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it is my pleasure to introduce you to our overseas representatives who will provide you with a market side look at Alaska's energy opportunities. Japan, Korea, and Taiwan have long been Alaska's targets for oil, natural gas, and coal exports. All are rapidly expanding users of energy and are ranked in the top ranks of Alaska's existing export trade. Japan has imported Cook Inlet natural gas since 1969. Korea Electric Power Corporation has provided the largest single annual coal purchase in the Pacific Rim from Alaska since 1988, and all three countries are now importing Alaska North Slope crude. We are here today to give you some perspective from our buyers in our largest markets. I have here with me today from Japan, Mr. Abe, yes, our trade representative, and Ms. Perota, our energy expert from Japan. K.S. Yong has been Alaska's trade representative in Korea since 1986, and Ida Gao began working for us in Taiwan in early 1996. How about that? Mr. Abe has worked for the state of Alaska since 1982 and has headed the Tokyo office since 1996, supervising all tourism and trade activities. As you remember, last year we combined tourism and trade and development in an effort to cut our costs and be more effective. Mr. Abe is now heading to the office in Japan. Mr. Abe represented Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau before that and worked for the travel industry in Japan. Ms. Kuroda has been with our staff since 1981 and concentrates primarily on energy issues, manufactured goods, and investment attraction. K.S. Yong opened the Alaska State Office in Seoul in 1986. He came out of the Korean Diplomatic Corps and has strong relationships in the highest levels of government and industry. Ida Yao is a part-time contractor for Alaska and Taiwan. She works on behalf of seafood and tourism concerns and is beginning to enter the energy arena. Ms. Yao will be giving you an overview today of Taiwan's energy market and major players. In all three of the countries, government plays a substantially larger role than in the United States. Government-to-government relations determine the outcome of most commercial transactions. In Japan, national energy policies guide the decisions of the trading companies and the electric power utilities. In Korea, the government is the major purchaser of energy, and in Taiwan, the government is the only trader in energy. Alaska is an energy exporter, needs to have experienced staff in place, and able to access government officials at all levels. Each of these three markets has a different way of doing business. Alaska's representatives are foreign nationals. They know how the game is played in their own countries. They open and keep open a different set of doors for Alaska's government and industry. They provide a safe means of obtaining market information for potential buyers. They transmit market concerns to Alaska producers. They make introductions at the highest levels to get the deal going and provide advocacy when negotiations are stalled. I would like to begin today with Mr. Abe of our Tokyo office and then proceed with presentations from our Korea and our Taiwan representatives. We'll be happy to provide you with any additional information or detail that you wish after you've heard the market reports. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present these companies' overviews this morning.
Mr. Abe. While you're coming up, I'd like to note that Representative Ogun has also joined us. Please come up.
Good morning. It is my pleasure to talk about the energy market in Japan for Alaska's energy resources. My name is Kojiro Abe, and I am the State of Alaska Japan Office representative in Tokyo. I am accompanied today by Mariko Kuroda, the energy specialist on our Japan staff. To begin, I will give you a brief overview of the history of energy use in Japan. Japan is the world's fourth largest energy consuming country, following the USA, Russia, and China. In fiscal year 1994, Japan's total energy supply was 577 million kiloliters of crude oil equivalent. Japan has few indigenous resources, and its dependence on imported energy exceeds 80%, the highest rate among major industrialized countries. The oil shocks in 1973 and 1978 had a devastating impact on Japan's energy supplies and inflicted considerable damage on Japan's economy. The Japanese government and the private sectors were forced to recognize the vital need for national energy security. Recent guidelines issued by the Japanese government outline three principles of national energy policy for the 1990s. One, energy security, secure a stable supply of energy. Two, economic efficiency. Three, environmental issues. Allow me to explain the current status of each of Japan's main energy supplies. Fiscal year 1994, oil occupied 57.4% of Japan's total primary energy supply and was the largest part of Japan's total energy mix. In 1993, imported oil accounted for 99.7% of Japan's oil supply. During the same time period, 76.4% of Japan's imported oil came from the Middle East. In fiscal year 1994, coal demand in Japan amounted to 126 million metric tons. Coal makes up 16.4% of Japan's primary energy supply and the country's second largest energy component. Japan is the largest coal importing country in the world. Due in large part to its lack of natural resources, Japan considers nuclear energy as one of its most promising oil alternative energy. During fiscal year 1995, nuclear power supplied 12% of Japan's energy needs, or third largest energy supplier. In Japan, natural gas use was minimal through the early 1970s, but grew rapidly during the latter part of the decade. In fiscal year 1994, total consumption of natural gas amounted to 59.3 billion cubic meters, about 11% of Japan's total energy supply, the nation's fourth largest energy product. Natural gas is expected to play an increasingly important role as a clean burning fuel and one that can reduce Japan's dependence on imported oil. Most of Japan's natural gas supply comes from imports. In fiscal year 1994, this amounted to 42.4 million tons. 74.5% was imported from ASEAN countries. To ensure a stable supply of LNG, Japan has been endeavoring to diversify its import sources. 44% of total imports of LNG have come from Indonesia since the middle of the 1970s. Next, let me describe the major players in Japan's LNG industry. They can be divided into three distinct groups: end-user utilities, trading companies, and the government. The end-users, electric power companies and the gas companies, are major players as buyers of LNG. They purchase LNG, but are not willing to invest in energy projects. This is due to the social responsibility held by the utility companies for their customers. Utilities are traditionally very conservative with their investment dollars. Japanese electric power companies and gas companies make their own long-term energy outlook by following Japanese government energy policy and revise it every year. Following their independent studies, utilities choose competitively priced LNG supplies timed to match their needs. The second type of major energy player are the trading companies in Japan. They have been investors in overseas LNG development projects and are very interested in promising future LNG prospects. The third prong in securing Japan's energy supplies is the government. In order to secure the stable supply of natural gas, the Japanese government has been trying to improve overseas investment conditions for Japanese companies. The Japan National Oil Corporation Law was revised in June 1994 for JNOC to be able to provide capital and loan guarantees toward Japanese companies to develop gas fields and the liquefaction of natural gas. Finally, I will talk about the outlook for future Japanese LNG demand. LNG's future in Japan looks positive for three main reasons. One, it has the potential to reduce Japan's dependence on imported oil. Two, it can be used to replace delayed nuclear power supplies. And three, it is a clean burning fuel that can be used to reverse the effects of a CO2 emission on the Japanese environment. According to Japanese end users, Japan's LNG supply is secured to the year 2005 by current long-term contracts. Some of the contracts are expected to be extended after 2005. Due to demand increases in Japan, however, additional supplies will need to be located to fill the extended contracts and to meet new energy requirements. The Ministry of International Trade and Industry of Japan now predicts that Japan's LNG needs in the year 2010 will be 60 million metric tons. And Japanese industry estimates that figure to be 70 to 80 million metric tons. Given these predictions, there are a number of advantages for Alaska North Slope LNG in Japan. One, Alaska's operating gas reserve has been confirmed. Two, the distance from Alaska to Japan is very short, only about one half of the distance from Japan to the Middle East. Three, there already exists a good relationship between Alaska and Japan. We have a track record. Tokyo Electric Power Company and the Tokyo Gas Company have long purchased Alaska LNG from the Cook Inlet. Since 1969, these utilities have worked through Mitsubishi Trading Company to secure more than 1 million metric tons per year. There have been no accidents, no problems, no delays in the delivery of Alaska LNG. Alaska is considered to be an extremely reliable supplier. Four, Japanese government and utilities want to diversify their LNG sources. Most LNG is imported from Indonesia and the Middle East. Five, North Slope producers BP, ARCO, and Exxon are known reliable suppliers in Japan. Six, Japanese trading companies have shown strong interest in Alaska North Slope LNG and are carefully watching its progress. Seven, demand for LNG is increasing due to CO2 emission issues and accidents in recent years at Japan's nuclear power plants. There are, however, some fundamental concerns of the Japanese government and industry with regard to Alaska's North Slope gas project. One, purchasing decisions are long-term. As mentioned earlier, Japanese end users make long-term decisions by studying demand and supply carefully. They are conservative in nature and take a considerable amount of time to reach a final decision. Two, commercial business negotiations are important. It is critical that the Alaska North Slope Gas Project be negotiated on a commercial basis. Too much government involvement or the use of political pressure has the potential of making end users uncomfortable, may discourage them, and may cause them to reduce the size of their participation. It must be noted that the Japanese government doesn't have the authority to force end users to buy any specific LNG. Three, it is important for Alaska to speak with one voice. End users, trading companies, and government officials are often confused by the number of options to develop North Slope gas. Between producers, the Alaska government, and the pipeline project developers, the message is not always the same. A coordinated front on the part of Alaska will be important to any future Japanese participation in the project. Demand for LNG by the Japanese market looks promising for any new Pacific Rim project. However, because of existing Pacific Rim competition, it is recommended that the Alaska side offer a coordinated proposal with a competitive price. Thank you very much for allowing us time today to discuss the potential for Alaska North Slope natural gas, and we would like to be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you very much.
Is there any questions of the committee members? Mr. Abe? I have one. You noted in your discussion that there was a time after 2005 that some of your contracts would come up and could either be renewed or could be given to somebody else. You also noted in your talk that Japanese companies sometimes invest in LNG plants and facilities in the other countries. How many of these contracts that would come up in 2005 do you think would be tied to their original contract because of ownership of Japanese companies? Are we looking at a lot of those contracts tied because of ownership, or are there some that are available for a new market?
That is going to be a very...
Could you come up and speak into the microphone?
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, it's kind of very difficult to figure out how many current long-term contracts will be extended after 2005, because its time is, we are talking about long future. And for example, Alaska's current project, LNG project from Kenai, they have current contracts until 2004. And after that, they are not sure, they do not have any confirmation that project will be extended or not. So talking same things, talking to other contracts. Probably we may know like after 2000 or 2001, which current contract will be extended, and which new project would be appeared as a realistic project. As also we said, Japanese end users, they make their own long-term outlook, energy demand outlook for 10 years. So major Japanese end users, they have their outlook until by 2005. Now today, this year is 1997. Probably sooner or later, Japanese major end users, they will make longer long term after 2005. We will watch carefully what their new information is. Then we will find out which current contract supply will be extended. or which new project will be added in their long-term outlook. This means every year, like this year, next year, we have to watch carefully for their outlook. It will be appeared how those supply will be moving or changing or adding new supply. And so that we said as our conclusion, we are telling you that Japanese end users going to make their long-term outlook, supply outlook after 2005 in the near future. So at that time, we have to show Alaskan project to them. Then they can say, okay, we can pick up Alaskan project for their long-term outlook after 2005 to 2010 or so. That's why we say we cannot lose this chance. This time is very important, we would say.
I have one other question. And when would they start negotiating contracts? If they want to purchase gas in the year 2005, when would those contracts have to be negotiated?
Oh, okay. We say, I have the private companies information. They have for example, Alaska's project, LNG project time schedule, they say it's about 10 years because Alaska's project takes longer than other LNG project in overseas because need to construct pipeline, need to construct a terminal, liquefaction plant, and also Japanese side also has to make LNG tankers, and also Japanese end users have to construct their receiving terminals. So they say it takes about 10 years. Well, if the technology is advanced, such as you can construct pipeline so quickly or so, we would say 8 years or so. But so it means to be able to start first production by 2005 means right now it's 8 years, now it's 1997. So it's going to be, just right now. And so that's why, since we frequently visit our good contacts in Japan to end users or trading companies, also we make a visit to Japanese government meeting, they are expecting to hear what your projects, a proposal or outline. Because just talking verbally, and Japanese side, they do not have any specific information, written information from Alaskan side. We are used to receive one private company, we say Yukon Pacific Corporation. They have been visiting Japan for many, many times in the past 10 years. And sometimes state government visits Japan and meeting with Japanese government saying we have gas. Northrop Gas, why don't you, are you interested in something? Just talking verbally, and so Japanese side, they don't have any specific information. So they cannot think about Alaskan's gas if it's a realistic project or not. They cannot evaluate anything yet. But time we say, they are kind of anxious about why you don't bring any project yet, because it's now is already 10 years ago, before 10 years. So that's why, I think it's now is a very important time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there any other Representative Ryan?
Yes, good morning. You mentioned in your presentation that two of the largest energy users are Tokyo Gas,
yes,
and Tokyo Electric,
yes,
Tokyo, I think.
Yeah.
They, do you have any past history of the use of, say, Tokyo Electric to show what their consumption figures were over past years and how they may have risen from year to year? So,
I do not. I had some statistical information today for you, but. Also, specifically, of course, I have information. So, When I get back office, I will be able to provide you. Or while I'm staying here, I think I can give it to you. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Abe and Mr. Yes. Barudo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sedgwick, if you would. I might mention that I first met you in 1989, and I went over with the Kenai Peninsula Borough Economic Development District. We were over there. I believe you were in the office at that time in Seoul. Is that correct?
Yes, that's yes. True.
Yes. In fact, I found your staff and yourself very, very helpful in assisting. And in fact, I might even mention that I was able to bring a bunch of tourists through your office back over to the Kenai Peninsula, and then we were also able to find an investor in a wildcat well from Korea in Cook Inlet, and I hit oil, and I think that was kind of a success story at that time. So with that, if you thank you very much.
May I take a seat now?
Yes, please.
Good morning. I am K.S. Yang, the Alaska State Trade Representative in Korea. I am pleased to be here today to talk to you about the Korean energy market. The notion of Korea as a struggling third world developing country is gone. Korea was the 11th largest market in the world in 1995 and is expected to be among the top seven by 2010. Korea had a 1996 growth rate of 6.8% and a slightly slower growth of 6.0% is expected in 1997. Korea has long been Alaska's second largest trading partner, with annual export in the area of $230 million. Coal, timber, seafood, and minerals all go to this market, which has been relatively stable. This picture changed dramatically last year, 1996, with the purchase of Northrop crude oil by LG Caltex of the Lucky Gold Star Group. LG Caltex has agreed to a long-term 20-year contract to purchase 30,000 barrels per day of Northrop crude oil at an annual cost of some $241 million. Hyundai Oil Refinery Company Limited also purchased 800,000 barrels last year and plans to increase that amount to 2.4 million barrels in 1997. These are some of the energy players Alaska can expect to deal with in the future, players who doubled Alaska's annual export to Korea with just two deals. Since 45,000 tons of LNG was first supplied to the Pyeongtaek thermoelectric power plant in late 1986, Korea's LNG consumption has been increased steadily and reached 7.259 million tons during January through October of 1996, a 35.0% increase over the same period in 1995. The increase in LNG consumption is due to the intensified movement of environmental regulations at home and abroad. According to the long-term LNG demand and supply plan released by Korea Gas Corporation recently, Korea's LNG demand is expected to reach 18.223 million tons in 2000 and 29.316 tons in 2010. To prepare for the expansion of the nationwide demand, Korea has not only increased LNG imports, but also diversified its import sources. Ever since the first LNG import was made in October 1986, Korea has imported LNG from Indonesia, Malaysia, Brunei, and Australia. Starting in 1999, Korea is going to import LNG from Qatar. Furthermore, Korea has concerns in the development of overseas gas fields, especially in Russia. Local consumption of LNG has been steadily increasing and reached 7.117 million tons in 1995, 25.4% increase in comparison to 1994. In 1996 alone, January through October, Korea's LNG consumption 7.259 million tons, showing a 35.0% increase over the previous year. Imported LNG has been utilized as power generation fuel and city gas. LNG consumption for electricity, which accounts for more than half of the current LNG consumption, has shown a rising trend without any fluctuation. City gas consumption has greatly increased, approaching 45.6% of all LNG consumption from January through October 1996, from just 4.6% in 1987. Total LNG consumption in the first three quarters of 1996 was 7.259 million tons, 3.812 million tons for power generation, and 307 million tons as an input for city gas manufacturing. Consumption for power generation and city gas in 1996 was up 30.8% and 38.8% respectively, compared with the same period of 1995. According to the revised long-term LNG demand and supply forecast by Korea Gas Corporation, Korea's demand for LNG is likely to reach 18.223 million tons in 2000 and 19.316 million tons in 2010. Korea settled on a policy towards diversifying its energy sources and emphasizing the use of clean burning environmentally safe fuels in the early 80s. In 1981, an LNG project was approved by the 11th Conference of Economy-Related Ministers and Korea Gas Corporation, the sole LNG importer in Korea, was established in 1983. The first LNG import was made from Indonesia in 1986. To meet the ever-increasing demand for LNG, Korea has increased the import volume and diversified the import sources by purchasing LNG from Malaysia, Brunei, Australia, and Qatar to secure a stable energy supply. Meanwhile, LNG production capacity of Asia-Pacific region is expected to be sharply expanded. The production capacity of Indonesia, Malaysia, Brunei, Australia, and perhaps Alaska is likely to be up to 18.7 million tons in 2003. In addition, considering that LNG production capacity of Middle East would be increased to 29.4 million tons in 2003, total LNG supply by Asia-Pacific and Middle East regions is estimated to reach 110.1 million tons in early 2000. Therefore, there is a high chance that LNG market in the Asia-Pacific would be converted to buyer's market in early 2000, so that fierce competition among suppliers is expected. There are many LNG projects in various stages of development around the world besides those projects listed above. Thus, LNG is currently very much a buyer's market, and Korea is one of dominant consumers of LNG. Under these circumstances, a favorable long-term contract with Korea is crucial to advance into Korean market. Korea Gas Corporation has been the sole LNG importers in Korea. Although any Korean company is allowed to buy LNG, subject to approval from the Korean Ministry of Trade, Industry, and Resources, the largest LNG end users in Korea are KEPCO, Korea Electric Power Corporation, and POSCO, Pohang Iron and Steel Company Limited. Korea Gas Corporation is also the exclusive wholesaler of LNG to the local market and distribute LNG to 33 retail city gas companies. It is worth noting that the growth rate of liquefied natural gas was very high due to Korea's need for economic development and a clean environment. Korea is currently a buyer's market. We recommend that Alaska form a strong united front to pursue its Northrop natural gas project. Korean participants are likely not only to purchase LNG, but also willingly participate in hard assets, financing of the pipeline construction and LNG tankers. An example of a recent Korean deal is seen in Korea Gas Corporation's participation in Oman's LNG project. Korea Gas has 5% ownership of the project and signed a 25-year contract for the purchase of 1.4 million tons of LNG annually, beginning early 2000. Korea is also a growing market for crude oil. As I mentioned, purchase of Northrop oil last year doubled Alaska's export to Korea, which is fully dependent upon imports from abroad for its entire demand for crude oil. Crude oil is being imported by five oil refiners, Yukong Limited, LG Caltex Oil Refinery Company Limited, Hanwha Energy Company Limited, Ssangyong Oil Refinery Company Limited, and Hyundai Refinery Oil Company Limited in most cases. And if it is deemed necessary, the Korea Petroleum Development Corporation would import crude oil for stockpiling purposes. Korea's crude oil stood at 11 million barrels in 1965, and crude oil imports in 1995 reached 625 million barrels, up 57 times from the 1965 figure, due largely to a whopping expansion in domestic demand. Taking in mind the First and Second World oil crisis, the government has adopted a top policy directive designed to ensure a stable supply of crude oil. Under the policy directive, the government has been exhausting strong efforts to maintain the optimum level in crude oil imports. The ratio of crude oil imports on the long-term contract basis to crude oil imports on a spot deal, and to diversify import sources of crude oil. Recently, however, despite the government's policy of diversifying crude oil import sources with intention of avoiding over-concentrated dependence upon the Middle East, Korea's import dependence on the Middle East was still high at 77.9% in 1995. Korea imported 625 million barrels of crude oil from 23 countries in 1995, and the 1997 crude oil import amounts reached over $10 billion, those accounting for 8.0% of the nation's overall merchandise imports during the year. Meanwhile, Korea began importing self-developed crude oil from abroad in 1988 through participation in equity ownership for overseas oil field development projects. The 1995 imports of self-developed crude oil came to 3 million barrels, excluding crude oil sold on the spot, or 0.5% of the 1995 overall crude imports. Korea will continue to grow in the expanding energy trade of the Pacific Rim. The government plays an important role in guiding this growth. Development of the North Slope Natural Gas Project, with Korea as a player, will depend on a well-defined project and well-informed participants. Our office can provide necessary market intelligence, two-way information between potential buyers and Alaskan sellers of all forms of energy resources. Thank you for this opportunity, and I would be happy to answer your questions.
Representative Ogden. Thank you, Mr. Young. How would you say buyers or the people that would receive the gas in Korea view our recent memorandum of understanding signing by the oil producers in Yukon Pacific? Do they view that in a positive light, and the recent actions towards getting our gas to the market, is that viewed positively over there?
Are you mentioning about the memorandum exchange between Korea and the Yukon Pacific with regard to LNG import?
I'm talking about the memorandum of understanding that the producers, Exxon, BP, and ARCO signed recently, and Yukon Pacific signed as well. How does Korea view that?
Well, on the part of Korea, as I mentioned, the Korea Gas Corporation is the sole importer there, even if private companies, such as not exactly private, but private or government-owned companies, such as Pohang Steel Mill or Korea Electric Power Corporation, are able to import LNG if they have a government permit. And I understand that before Korea Gas Corp. Now, on the part of Korea, the memorandum signed between Yukon Pacific and the gas owners does not affect any purchase policy. As long as Alaska is supplying LNG to Korea, because the Korea is not regarding the, Alaska as a separate suppliers. In other words, even if you have owners of North Slope LNG and Yukon Pacific, we regard them as a Alaska LNG and the Alaskan project participants. And it is Alaska's internal business and affairs whether or not they are going to form a consortium or participate in the Alaskan North Slope LNG together as a team. The Korea doesn't pay any attention to that. In other words, as long as Alaskan LNG is able to export to Korea market, and as long as there is a market and need for that in Korea, and the price is competitive, and Alaskan LNG supply can be timely made to Korea, we are willing to buy, the Korea is willing to buy it. Because as I mentioned in my note, by year 2010, there will be around 18 million tons of LNG, which is still unsecured. And in order to diversify the supply sources under the Korean government policy, the Korea is willing to buy any LNG from anywhere in the world. I don't know. That is my answer is to meet your question.
Yes, thank you very much. Any other questions? Representative Ryan, you have a question, Mr. Young?
Well, perhaps not a question, Mr. Chairman. If I could relate a slight anecdote, I noticed in the presentation here the notion of Korea as a struggling third world, a developing country, or gone. I was in Seoul about 5 years ago. I have a friend there who in the last government was director of plans and training on the National Security Council for the Republic of South Korea, General Lee In-soo.
And what is his name?
Lee In-soo.
Lee In-soo?
He made a comment, an offhanded comment to me that was sobering as far as an American is concerned. He said he found that American products are of excellent quality and the price is very cheap. And if you remember us from 30 years ago, that's just complete 180. We used to receive a lot of products from the Orient that had good quality and were very inexpensive. And now America is being looked on in the same manner. So we might not necessarily have the economic stick that we had in the past. And we're dealing with these folks. We should be happy with finding markets.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee members? I had one question, Mr. Young. On the infrastructure of distributing the natural gas, the LNG, in Korea, I know that you had schedules to increase that infrastructure. How is Korea progressing as far as internal building of pipelines to get LNG to various communities and various people? Would that become a opportunity for purchasing more gas in the future?
That's true. To my best knowledge, to the best of my knowledge, the entire Korea is not yet covered by the gas pipeline for the local supply distribution, and it will be completed. I forgot the year, but very soon. And as the pipeline construction for the local distribution is to be completed, the consumption will be on increase. In other words, the requirement for the local consumption will be on increase. So that will be also affecting the buyers to purchase the additional LNG from abroad. And if you don't mind to add my answer to Representative Hogan, you are interested in the effectiveness of the memorandum here. But I would like to emphasize one point that on the part of Korea, we like very much the Alaska to have one message about the Alaskan LNG to our market. In other words, you have four or five, I don't know the exact number, but you have four or five the gas owners here in other words, you have a number of gas owners here in Alaska, and also you have Yukon Pacific, who is promoting Alaskan LNG to the Asian market. Whenever they come to Korea, or it will be sent to Asian market, come to Korea, sometimes they are coming to us with slightly different voices based on their interest of promoting the product. So that as an end user, we are sometimes confused about what message we have to listen to for the future purchase of Alaskan LNG. So it is my suggestion, or if you don't mind, I like to recommend that your message among the gas owners and the Yukon Pacific must be simplified and unified, and form a united front and come to the market for the promotion of Alaskan LNG on top of the memorandum of understanding signed between all these interesting parties. That's also I wish to mention this time to add to your questions.
Thank you.
I make a comment on that.
Representative Logan, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're working very hard to present one message that's what we're trying to do here in the legislature is get everyone singing from the same sheet music,
yes,
so
yes.
to speak. And hopefully we'll have them all singing in harmony soon.
But I don't know whether it is proper for me to mention to you this story, but I understand that next month the president of Yukon Pacific, Mr. Jeff Lowenfeld, is coming to Korea and to see the hope to see the president of Korea Gas Corporation. But a couple of months ago, Alaskan Governor Tony Noll visited also Korea and met with Korean end users, leader of Korean end users, with a message from here. Then a few months later, the Yukon Pacific president is also planning to visit Korea and meet with the Korean gas president. And they called our office to find out whether the message that the Yukon Pacific president is going to bring is the same as the governor. So sometimes as an end user, they are confused about the message that you are going to bring there separately. That's the reason why I'm asking.
Well, thank you for that observation. And as Representative Ogun said, this committee's charge is to bring all those folks together with the administration and have one message that goes out. We're now trying to determine who all those players are,
mm-hmm.
and how we're going to do it, and then we will get that message to you.
So market is there in Asia, and we are willing to buy the market to meet increasing demand in that country. So you must unify the group here and come to our country, because other suppliers like Canada, Australia, they're just form the one delegation and come to approaching to users there with a simple one message.
Thank you very much for that message.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Yao from Taiwan?
Yes. Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about the emerging energy market in Taiwan. My name is Ida Yao, and I'm the State of Alaska Representative for Taiwan. Today, I'll give you an overview of Taiwan's energy picture and the players involved in energy production and sales. Please understand that I have only 1 year contract since 1996 with Alaska. So I'll have to research more about any question you raise in highly technical area. So in Taiwan, there are two major energy users, Taipower and the China Petroleum Corporation. Both are currently government-owned. For the time being, only China Petroleum Corporation, as soon as CPC, has the government okay to import petroleum products. This situation is going to be changed very soon. Within the next 2 years, Taipower and other private sector energy companies will be granted the right to import petroleum products. China Petroleum Corporation is now government-held and in the process of becoming a publicly held corporation. As part of Taiwan government's policy to achieve full liberalization, CPC is being forced to sell 51% of its stock to the public by the turn of the century. CPC is currently undergoing corporate reorganization to both become a public company and increase its global competitive edge. Its petroleum topping capacity is 720,000 barrels per day, and CPC is working to cut production costs and improve efficiency. CPC set up different business units and various task terms according to functional requirements. It also maintains liaison office in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Singapore to handle crude oil purchase, and joint venture projects with annual sales of $13 billion in 1995, among equivalent to 5% of the country's total GNP. It is not only ranked the biggest enterprise in Taiwan, but also one of the 500 biggest around the global. It is also increasing the storage and the transportation capacity in northern Taiwan, expanding the LNG treating facilities, and upgrading product quality to acquire international quality certificates. A third refinery will be constructed jointly with the private sectors in Kaohsiung. Growing cooperation with mainland China is expected to lead to more global marketing of petroleum products and additional investment in PRC. With regarding to LNG specifically, Taiwan process fuel natural sources and Taiwan possess few natural resources and the energy diversification has long been stressed in the country energy policy. To ensure stable and long-term supply, natural gas with its high efficiency and low pollution has been targeted as a real option. Since most of Taiwan's natural gas reserve have been depleted, the government has decided to import LNG from abroad to help improve natural gas supply. CPC began construction of an LNG receiving terminal project at Yunnan, Kaohsiung in 1984. This project carried a total investment of $1.2 billion with an annual handling capacity of 1.5 million tons. The terminal began operation in March of 1990 under a 20-year supply contract with Pertamina, the national petroleum company of Indonesia. Since beginning its work with LNG, CPC has found the demand for this clean and efficient fuel is expanding very fast. Taiwan's economy is booming and citizens have growing concern about the environment. CPC began to expand its Yong'an project the same year the terminal opened. An additional $700 million was invested to expand the receiving and the storage facility and the long-distance distribution truck line. The expansion was completed at the end of 1996. Imported LNG to Yong'an project will now total 4.5 million tons per year. Half of the volume will be supplied by the expanded contract with Pertamina, while Petronas Malaysia is supplied the other half. Thai Power is the other major energy user in Taiwan. 94% of Thai Power stock is currently government-owned, but by the end of the century, corporation will be made public. Thai Power, with its 30,000 employees, is the second largest energy supplier to Taiwan, to Taiwan consumers. LNG represents the third largest of Thai Power's energy stocks, the first being oil and the second being coal. Nuclear energy and hydroelectric also play an important role in Taiwan. Nuclear power is 29.1% of the total mix, and the hydroelectric is 7.1%. Two different types of projects are operated by Thai Power. A total of 59 power stations nationwide. The first are projects which are operated completed under the control of the corporation. These range from hydroelectric plant, oil, coal, nuclear, and natural gas. The second type of projects are those in which Thai Power purchases its energy from independent power producers. These projects totals 11 and are either coal, LNG, or oil fired. According to data provided by the Council of Economic Planning and Development, Taiwan's 1997 economy growth rate will be 6.7%. We expect the demand of power to continue growing. Based on Taipower's 1996 long-term power development program, our high peak electricity reserve margin will increase from 5.6% on 1996 to 11.8% in 1997. A reasonable margin should be 20 to 25%. Taiwan will fall far short. The looming threat of a power shortage will therefore still exist. Over the course of next 13 years, for the year of 2010, Taiwan's energy needs are expected to grow some 3.9%. LNG is the clear winner in energy sources increase. The imported supply of LNG is expected to be top 8.8% in the same time period. Declines are anticipated in nuclear and coal. Additionally, our government corporate structure is currently changing rapidly. Industrial consumption of energy continue to grow at a rapid rate. As Taiwan develops, its energy needs are increasing. Both of the major energy supply, CPC and the Taipower, as well as the private held utilities, have expressed interest in investing in foreign energy projects in order to secure equitable energy supply. I have bought with my details of Taiwan's energy supply and demand trends, and would be happy to provide any additional information you may request. As Alaska's trade representative in Taiwan, I fill several roles. The first is market intelligence, provided necessary information to both potential Alaska customers and to Alaska government and industry. Secondly, in Taiwan, government is very important, and I'm viewed as the official government contact for the state of Alaska. As a Taiwan national, I'm aware of different ways to approach situation with both government and industrial in my country. There are often questions for information from the Taiwan government that they feel best asking of government official. Finally, information can strategically distributed to benefit Alaska goals to target Taiwan companies and officials via my office. Please remember that your trade representative act as your eyes and ears in very dynamic markets. We can use in variety of ways to benefit Alaska. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you.
Thank you, Michelle. Are there any questions of Michelle from the committee? Seeing no questions, I thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank the other people again, Mr. Abe, Ms. Karuda, Mr. Yong, and Ms. Yao, and Commissioner Condon, and Debbie Sedgwick for coming forward. Commissioner Condon, would you like to wrap up or give us any? I would note that Commissioner Condon will be making a presentation on April 3rd. We'll be talking about the Van Mieris report and the recommendations from the administration, and what we as a committee and we as a legislator can do to assist in building this line. We'll also did you have any wrap up?
One word. Thank you.
The schedule that we're going to have over the next couple weeks is April 8th, I believe. We're going to be visiting or having some folks come in from some of the producers of Point Thompson and talk about some of their gas supplies and how that might impact the gas line. We'll also be talking, hopefully getting some progress reports or some ideas as to what's coming forward or what has been done with the producers that have formed the steering committee, and in the near future, and hopefully we'll be able to get some information and know what we can do during the interim to facilitate getting one message out to our customers in the Orient and Asia.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ogun.
Were you finished?
Yes. Go ahead.
I would just like, if possible, take the opportunity to ask our representatives to take a message back to the Orient that the Alaska legislature is very, very, very interested in providing a unified message that we are open for business and we do want to sell our gas, and we are working very diligently with the producers and Yukon Pacific to facilitate that. So let there be no doubt that we're giving this nothing but our highest attention. So
and I might point out that Representative Ogun is the chairman of the Resource Committee for the state. Representative Ryan?
Mr. Chairman, it seems from the testimony we've heard this morning that perhaps this committee, leadership of the legislature, the governor's office, and industry should get together and decide what protocol they're going to develop and use for marketing this with the various companies and governments of the Pacific Rim. It seems that's where the problem is. There's not an established protocol. There's not a single message. We, being the state, of course, can't have a diplomatic office, but that sure wouldn't hurt anything. Having lived in the Far East for a couple of years, I know a little something about security of arrangements and knowing that things are done in a proper way, and I think we need to consider that or recommend it.
Thank you very much, Representative Ryan. That's a very good message. As a facilitator of this project, the Oil and Gas Committee would like to establish that protocol amongst the Alaska producers, and then we can go forward with that, establish a protocol for our customers and our friends in the Orient. And they'll have to be just a little patient with us as we go through that, but we hope to get that done in the very near future. With that, unless there's other comments from committee members, I would adjourn this meeting at 10:54 approximately, and I thank our guests very much. Thank you very much.